Welcome to Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Bradley Chambers. We'll be joined by a special guest this week. Before we get started, let's thank our sponsors. The show is sponsored by Aerohive Networks, makers of the cloud-managed controllerless Wi-Fi, Jamp Software, makers of the Casper Suite, and Shobi, an iPad app for paperless classrooms. More about them as the show goes on. So as I mentioned, that Fraser is not with us this week, so we do have a special guest. It is Katrina Keene. She is from Chattanooga, but works many, many hours away as a director of innovation. So Katrina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about basically who you are and what you do.
Sure. I am technically an instructional technology consultant for Canterbury School in Fort Myers, Florida. My title there, though, is Director of Innovation. It's a unique situation because I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee, actually on Signal Mountain, and Canterbury School was hiring for a full-time Director of Innovation. However, I couldn't make the move down, so we decided to kind of think outside the box, and I wrote a plan as a consultant. So I'm there 2 weeks out of every month, and then back in Chattanooga 2 weeks out of every month, and the 2 weeks that I'm back in Chattanooga, I get multiple opportunities, such as coming by here today to record this podcast, visiting other schools, going to conferences, speaking about Canterbury School, and learning new things that I can take back to Canterbury. I also spend a lot of time Skyping in with classrooms. I actually have taught a sixth grade class via Google Hangouts a few weeks back, so it makes it pretty exciting.
So how long the drive? I mean, like, I'm assuming the 2 weeks you're down there, you leave, I guess, Sunday. I mean, how long does it take you to get down there?
If I drive, normally about 11 hours, but I usually fly. I fly out of Chattanooga Airport, usually into Tampa, and sometimes directly to Fort Myers, and then I rent my car, and off I go.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, when I started following you on Twitter and started to try to piece together, like, how this distance thing worked, I thought, that is a commute. That is a commute and a half. But, I mean, it's funny, like about 10 years ago, I was like kind of studying about like the future job market, and a lot of people, they predicted that most people or a lot of people would end up kind of working for themselves and basically doing a ton of outside consulting. Companies were reluctant to hire people. This was back in like 2005. The economy was starting to slow. They were reluctant to hire people full time. But like if you could basically consult for various companies, that you were basically your own boss. And so it sounds like you've kind of done that. So how did you get into working in education?
Sure. So undergraduate school was, late 90s, and I was an elementary education major. So I started out teaching kindergarten, first grade, third grade, K-5 computers, and took such a strong interest in computers and technology. And so I ended up getting my master's in 2004 in instructional technology and went on to be a technology facilitator for a high school in St. Louis, Missouri. And then from there moved down to Chattanooga and continued in instructional technology. So it's been quite a journey. Later in that journey, I took another interest in, I guess, higher level thinking, more visionary thinking, technology planning, bring your own technology planning, one-to-one. And so started looking into positions such as the one I'm in now, Director of Innovation.
Before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor this week. It's Jamp Software. Jamp Software provides IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies in the classroom. Works with Macs, iPads, iPhones, and even Apple TVs. They have a great app for teachers called Casper Focus that goes on their iPads. It allows teachers to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV assigned to the classroom, and choose and distribute iBooks. Now, as we kind of look ahead and the rumored changes to Apple's deployment programs, now is the time to pick the right mobile device management company. And Fraser and I both put our money where our mouth is, and we both use them in our school and have no plans of changing because they've really, really innovated heavily in this space with MDM vendors. So if you'll learn more about Jamp and the Casper Suite, go to outofschool.net, and they have a special link in our show notes that you want to use to contact them. So again, thanks to Jamp for sponsoring the show this week. So, it's interesting. You think, obviously, the way Fraser and I do, that there's a lot of high-level vision and planning that has to go into technology deployments. It's not just about buying iPads or buying Macs and just throwing them in the classroom. You have to plan through, you know, what are your goals? And I think that is something that most schools fail to do when starting a deployment, is saying, what are our goals? Because your goal should never be, we're just going to do technology, because honestly, you're wasting your money. I mean, you don't buy new math curriculum just to buy new math curriculum. Like, you're trying to solve a problem. So as you kind of think back and to, you know, where we've been in technology, what do you think, what's been your biggest surprises in the past few years?
I think one of the my biggest surprises in the last few years is, maybe thinking back to, 2008, 2009, when so many schools jumped on board with, you know, one-to-one and, purchasing iPads. And but what I think that a lot of schools, as you said, you know, possibly failed to do or, didn't quite think about was the visionary process and where they were going with that technology. And, I think a lot of schools recently in the last couple of years took a step back and just were very patient with all the new technologies that have come out. And they took a step back and said, you know what, we need to be more visionary, think about, you know, maybe even make some predictions about where technology's going and what are we doing as a school. And that was one of the things that the school that I'm at, Canterbury School, did. And one of the things that drew me to this position was because it was such a visionary position. It wasn't one that was just, we need somebody that integrates technology and, you know, the typical job description of an instructional technology director. Rather, it was somebody that said, okay, here's our school. This is, we're wide open. We're an open book. We need help. And, that's what drew me there. So I was pleasantly surprised with their take on the position. And it's been actually a very exciting journey for the last year.
Well, I think one of the things that makes you unique than maybe other consultants is that you've done it. You know, you're not someone that came out of college and just became a consultant. Like, you've been a teacher. Like, you see the challenge. You've kind of seen every possible, you know, avenue. Like, I have a buddy that started out as a recreation pastor at a church. And if you're not familiar with, like, church hierarchy, the rec pastor is generally like the lowest man on the totem pole. And so he did all the grunt work. I even literally watched him clean up, throw up one day out of our family life center. And I thought, like, that is a future leader, because someone that's willing to do that, do the literal dirty work, is willing to basically see the job through. And so he told me, he says, you know, I hope to aspire to be a senior pastor one day, and I will have the perspective of hopefully, you know, multiple jobs in a church. And I think that's helpful for consultants, because it's so easy to come through and spout out high-level thinking about innovation and integration. But when you can say, look, like, I realize the challenges you face as a teacher, like, you know, teachers, I mean, the old joke is you work 8 to 2 or 8 to 2:30, but teaching is a very, very difficult job, because you're essentially making very, very detailed presentations all day long. And so just as if you were doing a presentation for your job every day from 8 to 3, there's a lot of prep work that goes into that. And I see that failure a lot of times when the people that are driving forth the innovation don't have the experience to back it up. Like our headmaster, for example, he used to be a teacher. And I think that, and I'm not saying every headmaster has to be a teacher, you know, prior, but I think that's very, very helpful, because they can say, like, I'm asking to do something that I've done before. We're trying to drive innovation. We're trying to make things better. And we're not changing things just to change things. One of the kind of the trends I've seen is the move away from speeds and feeds, and to try to step back and look at, like, ultimately, what is our goal with technology, and what is it that we're trying to do? Because I think that's the challenge a lot of schools got into 3 or 4 years ago, when it's like, okay, everybody's buying the iPad. Let's buy a truckload of iPads. They didn't plan infrastructure. They didn't plan teacher training. They didn't plan curriculum integration. It was just, here are iPads and make it work. And you would never do that in, like, regular business. Like, you would say, like, okay, we're handing you these new tools. Here how it's replacing what we do now. You would figure out workflows for those employees. And that's, I think, what a lot of schools miss. And that's what, you know, obviously Fraser and I have covered heavily in our deployment series that we did last year, was you've got so many things to think through before you ever buy the first device. Because if you don't have a plan, you may be buying the wrong device.
No, that's so true, and I think that a lot of schools and districts and counties miss the big piece of professional development for professional learning for teachers. So many times they buy, you know, just a plethora of devices, all kinds of things. They're heavy on the hardware side, but, you know, it's hard for teachers when all that is thrown at them and they don't have anyone there supporting them in the classroom. And one of the big pushes that I'm making right now in all the schools that I go and visit is, I guess, pushing the message of having digital leaders in schools. And digital leaders can easily come in the form of a headmaster or a director or a principal, you know, but those are the models in the schools. Not only am I, you know, as director of innovation, but I think that all schools have an opportunity to lead teachers and support them in the classroom so that they aren't fearful of technology and they don't feel alone. They have such challenging jobs, and I admire every single teacher, you know, for the work that they do every single day. And I've been there and I know how it is. And, you know, and I know the opportunities that are available, and technology can make it fun for teachers and students.
As you look forward, and obviously I think, you know, you have a unique perspective because not only do you do, you know, have, you're heavy on consulting, but you also are in the classroom, which I think is almost perfect because what you do in the classroom as a director of innovation feeds heavily into your consulting side and also, you know, back and forth, because what you learn on the consulting field, you take back and forth to your classroom. You eventually get to, you do training 2 weeks out of the month, and that's got to be, and in some ways, fantastic. And you mentioned going to other schools, and I mentioned before that I think that is incredibly valuable. And I get more out of just going to other schools and taking tours and talking and having lunch with their, you know, headmasters or their IT folks or their teachers and just talking than I do necessarily going to big conferences. Because what I love about conferences are in between the sessions, almost like just the talking, and you can, you're, I call it pulling strings. Like you're just trying to, you know, find ideas. And so as you like kind of look forward and you see kind of what's coming and you think through and you plan at your school, what concerns you going forward about the general state of ed tech?
Well, as I mentioned before, I think one of my biggest concerns is the digital leader piece. I think so many schools are missing that piece, putting equipment in schools, teachers don't have the support, and they don't know where to look for that. They don't have managers in the school or leaders in the school that are modeling the use of technology. Therefore, when they think of technology integration, still in their minds, it's this add-on. You know, it's extra prep work. It's difficult. And, you know, I'm trying to, I guess, tear that barrier down for teachers and show them that, you know, technology isn't something that's separate. It can be fun. It can be engaging. And but I can't do that alone. And that's, you know, one of the messages that I'm sending right now. It has to be an entire culture shift within schools. It has to be where all the directors, the headmaster, the principals, depending on, you know, what kind of school you're in, are making this push together so that it's an all-school culture shift. I don't know another way of saying it or thinking about it. So I think that's quite a challenge for many schools today.
No, I totally agree with that. And, you know, just as when you like deploy a new piece of curriculum or you're deploying new textbooks or even when you're doing major building construction, it's a team effort and everyone has to be on board. And in the school is, schools are funny type organizations. They feel differently emotionally than like a non-education type environment. You know, I came from a background in telecommunications. I've been in education for almost 6 years, and there is a much more family feel in a school than elsewhere, because most, if you look at the school's, you know, organizational chart, it's very flat generally. You know, you generally have you know, a lot of teachers reporting directly to either an assistant headmaster or a headmaster. And so everyone's in a lot of ways on the same level, you know, on a hierarchy. And there, I see a lot of cooperation in schools that you might not see in the general business world, because you think about it, like if you, you know, have a sales staff, they're all ultimately after their own sales. But teachers are, you know, they don't mind. And it's been interesting among our school and just the outside communities. Teachers are very collaborative with competing schools. I mean, we think in reality, the students at our school, you know, have a choice of multiple private schools in our city and public schools. And so essentially the other schools are our competition because the kids can only go to one school, but we're so happy to collaborate because we all love the craft. We all love teaching because we know something that we share, we're going to get back five times in return the amount of, you know, basically free ideas and free content and brainstorming sessions. But before we move on, let's thank our next sponsor. The next sponsor of tonight's show is Shobee. Now, Shobee's an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobee, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads and then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly on the documents. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobee from thousands of compatible iPad apps or by completing assignments with Shobee's built-in tools. Shobee keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Now, Shobee Basic is completely free, and teachers can get started with their students in just a few minutes. But if you want to look at Shobee Pro, if you try the free version and want to try Shobee Pro, they have a special deal for listeners of our show. If you buy five teachers, you get five teachers for free for the price of five. So it's buy five, get five free, and that deal will last for a whole year. So it's buy five, get five free. Now, if you want to download the free app, you can just search for Shobee in the App Store, S-H-O-W-B-I-E, or go to shobee.com/out of school for the deal on Shobee Pro. So again, you can try Shobee Pro, you know, pretty good deal, buy five, get five free. So thanks to Shobee for sponsoring the show this week. You know, I was writing an article last night about the rise and fall of digital whiteboards in education. And Fraser and I have talked about that. And to me, the failure of that technology in my mind is, and the fact that like I recognize that, gives me hope that I'm going to be able to kind of stay ahead of the curve long term. Because when I came into ed tech in 2009, those were like the next big thing. You know, there was that big, I think it was Marzano research report that came out in 2008, 2009. And then you were followed with the economic stimulus money here in America that really drove school-wide deployments of digital whiteboards. And I was sitting there thinking, like, why did these technologies fall? And I came up with three reasons. Number one was the iPad. When you look at, you know, do you want to put one big board in front of the classroom, or do you want to hand, you know, 15 smaller boards to every student to put in their hands? You know, what do you want to do? Number two is the cost. Again, we go back to the iPad reference. For the price of a Promethean board, you can probably outfit at least half your classroom, depending on the class size, with iPads. And number three was complexity. That the entire thing was written, to me, not for teachers. You know, maybe it was aimed at teachers, but it was not written for teachers because if you saw the complexity of the software, it was not something teachers would want to be able to pick up easily. And so it was kind of a lesson to me in terms of like keeping an open mind about when things don't work, even though, like, again, there may be, you know, I still think the iPad works very heavily in education, but there may be a day 3-4 years from now that I have to step back and say, I don't think that's a great device for schools now. And so, like, I'm trying to keep myself honest about technology that I may love now. You know, going forward, does it make sense? And so again, you know, it's just been interesting to watch that because they've largely fallen out of favor, and you don't hear about as many schools deploying them. And the ones that have, I generally hear that they say like we have them, but they're not being used to their full potential. Do you have any thoughts on basically the technology as a whole and where we went wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. And us talking about this is actually validating my thoughts for the last about 5 years. It was about 5 years ago that, you know, I was saying I just don't understand why schools are purchasing, you know, digital whiteboards. It did not make sense to me. We had, you know, the iPad out, tablets out, and why are we spending thousands of dollars on a teacher-centered device? It didn't make sense. You know, when we could put these tablets in the hands of the students for the price of the whiteboard, like you said. So I find that interesting. And, you know, at that time when I kept seeing all these schools, they would announce on their websites, you know, we have, you know, digital whiteboards and, you know, we're future ready. And, you know, I didn't understand that. And my question to them was always, and, you know, what are you going to do with them? What are your plans for them? And every time I would walk into a classroom, they were a glorified you know, dry erase board. So they would use it as a projector. You know, a few teachers would use the tools and the software that came with it, but that was a lot of prep work, and a lot of teachers did not want to fool with that. So, no, I completely agree. And it's going to be interesting in the next, you know, 3-5 years, what's going to come. You know, we've seen this shift even as Chromebooks have come out and so many schools jumping onto Chromebooks and everything going in the cloud. So things are changing so quickly, and I'm excited to see what's to come.
Yeah, I think if you look at, you know, we almost like we should come up with like foundational things that new technology must have. Like, and I think going forward, like, things are going to need to be cloud-based. They're going to need to be collaborative. They're going to need to be drastically simpler than anything before it. And we actually probably, I'm going to kind of hash this out in my mind later, and kind of something to gauge new technology by. Because I think if we would have, you know, like if digital whiteboards came out today, we would think like, no, I'm good. Like you can see that now in retrospect and see where that technology was flawed. And again, I'm not saying that there's no place for it. You know, certainly, you know, smart boards are very popular in business as well. But again, if you look at like what it means to be collaborative and what it means to be to integrate technology into our curriculum, you're right. A teacher-centered device is not the future. It's student-centered devices, and it's them, you know, it's them taking advantage of it and them collaborating with their teacher, with other students. You know, to me, one of like I love hearing when students say like, "Yeah, we worked on this last night. I was working on this with a classmate over Google Docs." And you're thinking like, that is the future. And I've been out of I graduated high school in 2002, and if I look at the technology now, you can think like, I can't imagine being in high school or college now with the technology they have, like with Evernote, Dropbox, Google Docs, Google Spreadsheets. Like, you know, I remember like, you know, in college having to meet on Sunday nights to work on projects, and there would be no reason for that. Now, you could just literally do all of that over the internet with things, with, you know, team chat services like Slack, again, with things like Google Drive. You could just do it all from home, or you could all jump on Skype together. It would be absolutely fantastic. So, got a few more questions, but before we get to those, I want to thank our final sponsor of the night. It is Aerohive Networks. You guys know Aerohive. They are the makers of the controllerless, cloud-managed Wi-Fi network. They have technology that enables organizations of all size to use mobility to engage customers and grow their businesses. It's deployed in over 13,000 enterprises worldwide. They have a proprietary mobility platform that takes advantage of the cloud and a distributed architecture to deliver unified, intelligent, simplified, and cost-effective networks. Love Aerohive Networks. I'm getting ready to deploy an entirely new 11AC network. I'm such a huge fan of theirs. If you want to learn more about them, go to aerohive.com. That's AeroHive.com. And if you have questions, they have a great community portal called Hive Nation that you'll find on their website as well. It's where you can chat with Aerohive employees and other Aerohive customers as well. So thanks to Aerohive for sponsoring the show this week. So Katrina, talk to us about EdCamp. I've seen a lot about EdCamp on Twitter. So talk to us about basically, you know, how this works from region to region, city to city, and what are the goals?
Sure. EdCamps are increasingly popular nowadays. I am one of five organizers for EdCamp Gig City, which will happen May 9th this year. So very excited about that. It'll be held at Chattanooga Christian School. What an EdCamp is basically also known as an unconference. But if you think about the conference model, you know, where thousands of educators come together, it's very planned out. They usually have, you know, keynote speakers, presenters, and you move room to room. You almost, in a sense, sign up for a session or mark which session you want to go to, move room to room, learn about whatever it is you want to learn about for an hour, depending on the time of the session, and then you leave the session, go to lunch, whatever. Where EdCamps are different are there's nothing set up. You walk into, I shouldn't say nothing, there's a lot of prep work that goes into it, but when I say nothing, I mean as for the session. So when you walk into an EdCamp, there isn't anything planned for sessions, and you go and you decide when you get there what you want to learn about. And that's what's neat about it. And I just attended EdCamp Rome in Rome, Georgia this past Saturday. And when I got there, they had a wall and it was all, you know, taped off, and presenters, if you wanted to present, could sign up to present on something and then you could go to that class and decide to learn about it. If after 15 minutes you said, yeah, you know, I already know about this, I'm going to go catch another session, you're free to get up and leave that session and walk into another one. So it's just, it's needs-based learning, and it's a great place to go and network and talk with other educators. It's wonderful. And fortunately, a couple weeks ago, I was in New York attending a conference there, and Kristen Swanson, who is the creator of EdCamps, was the keynote speaker there. So I got to sit down and talk a little bit with her about EdCamps and, you know, kind of the thought behind it. So it was an honor to meet her as I go forward into working on EdCamp Gig City.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I love those kind of unconferences where it's just about talking and about sharing. And there's not necessarily always the hard and fast agenda where you're rushing, you know, from place to place. And you're, you know, I just love the conversations that that happen. And that's one of the reasons I love Twitter, because you just kind of have these unscripted conversations where, you can learn. If you're a teacher that you're struggling with something, you can go there and just ask, like, this is what I'm dealing with. What do you guys suggest? Or and that's probably been one of the things that's most helpful for me in my career is just networking and having a Rolodex of other people in my job that I can call and ask advice. Like, hey, I'm dealing with this company with this issue. You know, I know you guys use this vendor. Have you seen that? And just helping validate things, your ideas you have, or again, things like that. And the great thing about it being on Saturdays is it's drastically cheaper for teachers to attend because they don't have to get subs for their classroom. And they're not going to take time off from work, so they can come in and you know, hang out for three quarters of a day, half a day, and learn, and then go back on Monday and, you know, again try to implement that. You know, one of the things that, you know, about your situation to me is most interesting is how do you manage, you know, again, traveling to and from Florida? How do you manage? I mean, because I'm sure that the teachers at your school, I know they know you don't work full time, but they work full time. And so how do you manage, I meant to ask you that earlier, but how do you manage that in terms of protecting your time when you're not there, but also wanting to do your job?
Sure. Well, technically I do work full time for them. So even though, right now at this very moment, even though I'm here, you know, we're here, I'm talking about Canterbury, I get to visit another school, learn about them, see their space, and then take those ideas back to Canterbury. So the teachers, I'm technically on call all day long, every day, even when I am in Chattanooga. So, for instance, this morning I already made 3 phone calls to the school, talking with 2 teachers and IT this morning, just about various issues. So I'm very plugged in. Tomorrow during the admin meeting, I'll Skype in and talk about technology. So I take every opportunity to, I guess, get the teachers and administrators there to think outside the box in terms of what positions look like in 2015. I think jobs in general are changing format and changing ways where we can work still collaboratively from afar. So it's a neat opportunity, and it was really refreshing to be able to go into a school and then be able to see it from another viewpoint instead of just the traditional, you know, 8-to-4 position, 5 days a week.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you're right, because there is so much of our work that is just nose to the grind. I've got to sit down in front of the computer and hash out ideas. And so you almost have to structure your work schedule and say, when I'm there, I am meeting with people all day long. Like, I'm not in the office, you know, sitting at a desk, or if you're in my case, you'd be standing at a desk. You know, but you do all that kind of admin work when you're home and say, I'm going to plan. And yeah, I think that's a great idea. And it probably allows you immense time to focus and to brainstorm, because you're not consistently just there putting out fires and things like that. And since you've got on-site IT staff, you know, you're not having to, hey, turn the Wi-Fi on and off, things like that. I've seen you tweet a lot about mystery Skype classrooms. I have not the slightest idea of what that is. So explain that to me.
Sure. Mystery Skype is one of my favorite things to talk about. What Mystery Skype is, and you can do it with, you know, any video conferencing, Google Hangout, Skype, FaceTime. However, Skype brings another element to what it's all about, because they have something called Skype Classroom. And if you go online, you can just do a Google search for Skype Classroom. But you'll find, once you sign up, once you join, that there are thousands of educators around the world waiting to connect with you about various, you know, whatever subject area that you teach, if you're a teacher. But what Mystery Skype is, it's actually a game. So you connect with another classroom, but you don't tell the students in your class where that classroom is located. They could be anywhere in the world. So prior to connecting with that other classroom, wherever they may be in the world, you'll want to prep your classroom. So you want to have a group of students that are your map keepers, and they're going to, you know, mark off on the map where that classroom is not, or where they think they are. Then you've got your note takers. You have your camera students where they're filming it, and you can get as creative as you want with it. But the objective of Mystery Skype is to ask yes/no questions to figure out where that other class is in the world, and it is so much fun. And once you get to that final question where the students say, "Are you in, you know, in whatever state or whatever country that they are?" and if they get it right, it is a huge celebration. But the geography that goes into that and the skills that go into that are unreal. And I've played myself with other classrooms around the world. They'll, you know, see that I'm very into Mystery Skype, and they'll ask me to be a guest Mystery Skyper. And some of the questions that the students ask are sometimes very challenging, and I don't even know the answers, and so we'll laugh about it. But there's one classroom in Indiana. Matt Miller is the teacher, and he is always open to Mystery Skyping. So wherever I am, you know, New York, Florida, wherever I'm presenting, oftentimes I'll Mystery Skype in as an example to his classroom. And so he's been great about that. But a lot of fun. Look up Skype Classroom online and join and connect with another teacher and do a Mystery Skype with your class. It is so much fun.
Yeah, it's kind of like your real life guess who. My 4-year-old loves to play that game, and try to teach him, like, it's going to be, you know, yes, no questions and things like that. So it is like a real life guess who. So that's really interesting. As we wrap up, Katrina, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will want to connect with you. Where can they find you around the internet?
Sure. You can find me at my website at www.teachintechgal.com, spelled TEACHINTECHGAL. Also on Twitter. I'm very active on Twitter at teachintechgal. You can find me on Google Plus, pretty much any social networking site if you Google me. So, but I'm most active on Twitter and on my website.
We'll have links to her website and her Twitter account as well. So if you're looking to grow your network on Twitter of other educators, Katrina would be a great person to follow. I followed her about 3 or 4 months ago and have found, you know, a lot of great links she's tweeted and retweeted. So it would be, she'd be a great person to follow if you want to kind of help start learning using Twitter. So again, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll have a new show next week, as always. Thanks to our sponsors, Jamp Software, Aerohive Networks, and Shobi. I, of course, am Bradley Chambers. You can find me on Twitter at Bradley Chambers, and I'm on the web at chambersdaily.com. We'll have links to anything we mentioned in the show notes at outofschool.net. And if you haven't rated us in iTunes, we'd certainly appreciate that. You can go to itunes.com/outofschool, or you can just search for Out of School in the Apple Podcast app. So again, thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.